Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Nick Ashew on The Fan. Bruce Allen still staring at me in the studio here. This is why I do stuff for my home studio, Chris. I don't have to look at Bruce Allen. I have my Shane Falco jersey hanging behind me. We'll go with that instead. I could still hear his voice. Oh, it's just there. There's a lot of great stuff in the studio, but the Bruce Allen thing, man. You know, it's like when you see in the movies where people take a picture of somebody and they put it face down. I need to do that. I don't know if I can make it two more hours of Bruce Allen smirking at me. Put a beer right next to it, too.
Post-it note or something.
And you know what, man? That might be the way to go. I'm going to take, like, a piece of printer paper in here.
Now, if only we had office supplies around here.
Listen, I spent years in the downstairs studio here and didn't get anything down there either. So, you know, it's just office supplies. I need Dunder Mifflin to come supply us with some paper. Where's Michael Scott when you need him? Nick Ashew on The Fan, yes. I think in the end, again, I will say this and I will say it again, Terry McLaurin and the Commanders work this out and everybody forgets and you get focused on football. But we're caught in the middle of it right now and it involves money and millionaires and billionaires arguing about money and it makes it damn polarizing. Ellis in D.C., I hear you have a solution for this. What's that?
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on. So everyone talks about the comp of DK Metcalf, and that's the problem. DK Metcalf's contract is not the problem. The contract that's the problem is Brandon Ayuk's contract. Brandon Ayuk gets $30 million a year, and he can't carry Terry McLaurin's jockstrap, right? And who is the assistant manager that signed Brandon Ayuk to all that money? Adam Peters. So Adam Peters just want to make sure he doesn't make the same mistake twice, right? Brandon Ayuk was just running go routes, right, putting up these numbers when he really wasn't that good. Terry McLaurin, definitely, though, if I'm his agent, I'm like, Terry McLaurin showed you his skill set, right? You just got to look at the playoffs, what Terry McLaurin did. Took a slant in the NFC Championship game to the house, took a screen against Detroit to the house in the playoffs. So Terry McLaurin is more than just the one who runs the go routes and catches, you know, the fades from Jaden Daniels. So I'm Team Terry. I think that's the comp that's really holding this contract back. But the solution I have is just stretch it out to 6 years. If you're Adams Peters, reward Terry. Show that we want him to retire as a Commander for Washington. Stretch it out to 6 years. Guarantee him 60 up front, right? So you basically, the team is on the hook for 30 million a year for the first 2 years. And then stretch it out 6 years. So if he wants to play and stay a Commander, he can stay a Commander. But make those last 4 years option years and make them worth less. Like make them worth $15 million for year 3, 4, and 5. And then what the caller said, give them incentives for year 3, 4, and 5. So that helps the team out by stretching it out. So your average value per year is probably going to be like 20 or $18 million. But Terry's going to get that that guaranteed money up front, right? Give him a signing bonus of like $70 million, then stretch it over, you know, the 6 years. Problem solved. And he's a Commander for life. He retires with us.
Hey, listen, I'll cut you off there a little bit. I thought you were done. But that being said, look, if you're going to front load a contract, this is the time to do it when Jaden Daniels is on his rookie deal. And that's what a lot of teams want to do. I don't think you're going to see a contract stretched out 6 years. We have one team in this city that already likes to stretch out their contracts, what feels like 50 years, the Nationals, but I don't, you know, and again, listen, there are levels of the collective bargaining agreement. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know. Like, I could sit there and read it, and I'd understand it once I read it, but I don't know off the top of my head. So I don't even know whether you could do a six-year contract. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. I don't. Nobody's really doing it. I don't think you want to set the precedent to do that. You're looking at me like you have an answer to this.
No, they have a bunch of weird veteran minimums that start going up and things too. So it's like it's not as easy as like you can't do what they're doing. Like Shohei Ohtani, we're like, oh, we'll pay you like $1 million bucks a year for 10 years.
Yeah, and then you can't do it.
Pay you $1 billion in 10 years.
Let me tell you something. By the way, one of the biggest scams in sports is what the Dodgers have been doing. The Shohei Ohtani contract. Like, don't get me wrong. Good for them for doing it. If the rules allow you to do it, do it. But for the love of God, if you're baseball, I know Bryce Harper just, you know, dropped F-bombs at, you know, the commissioner when he was there at some meeting, and they talking about a salary cap. But we got to do something in baseball. The fact that the Dodgers can have as many stars on their roster as they can and pay them baseball's minimum wage, essentially, and stretch it out 50 years, and everybody's getting paid. It's Bobby Bonilla Day, and then Shohei Ohtani Day, and then Max Scherzer Day one day. And, like, you just go down the list of these guys that have got, look, it makes sense. But, like, if you're baseball, dude, you gotta stop this. It's a loophole that's – there are loopholes where it's like, oh, that's smart. And then there's loopholes where you go, okay, it's – the hole has gotten too big. We got to close this up a little bit.
I think what's kind of amazing is you get some of these older owners, and they're just kind of like, yeah, someone's going to pay them when I'm dead, and I don't have to worry about it.
Right.
Like,
well, you know what?
You know,
yes.
It's not going to be my team at that point. So.
Well, I've always wondered how, like, Bobby Bonilla's contract worked, too, where it's like, what if the Mets folded as an organization? Like, it's not going to happen in today's sport. They're all worth too much. But you know what I mean? Like, what type of clauses were put all the way back in the day to protect you from that? Like, what happens? Yeah. Is there franchise folding insurance that exists?
I mean, I do know baseball has a new CBA coming up, they're talking about a big strike maybe again, like the one back in the 90s happening.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, Bryce Harper sure sounded pretty upset when he was talking. So
yeah, well, because he didn't want a salary cap. It gets guys like him paid, you know?
I mean, I can understand why nobody. I mean, I technically have the soft cap, but obviously, I mean,
it's not a real
cap. It's what makes it sometimes as a Nats fan, you're like, I mean, are we just a farm team for the Yankees and the Mets and the Dodgers, the big market teams? You know, it's like, you bring this talent in.
The Nats were big money spenders. It's just been a while. That's the issue. It's like, we got a taste of the big life, and now it's gone.
Well, they got Soto. We had him. They got him. Like,
I know. Well, listen, the one thing I always said, even though he's no longer here, in Rizzo, I always trusted. The guy could identify tons of young talent, but it was going to be hard to find lightning in a bottle, bringing them all up through the farm system and build a World Series contender twice like they already did. So, yeah, look, baseball is a whole other world. Every sport has a completely different collective bargaining agreement, and there's so much minutia and just junk you got to sift through. You're wading through the muck, and it's like, there's a reason why there are people, and that's all they do. That's it. All they do is handle salary cap, or they handle collective bargaining agreements and all of these different things. There's a reason for that, and that's it. That's why. So, yeah, look, every team has a different way that they do business in the NFL. These holdouts tend to look very similar, except for Dallas, where everybody knows exactly what's coming. It's always going to be. Let me tell you something. I pray that Jerry Jones lives to 100 years old and runs the Cowboys the entire time until he is literally no longer in any form of capacitation. I don't even know if that's a word, but I hope that that's the case. There was a quote from him a couple of weeks ago where it was something along the lines of
Michael Parsons.
Not that. It's when he talked about, he thinks for a few seconds every once in a while about stepping away from, like, having any player personnel control. Like, I know it's not just him, but let's be real, it's still him. Jerry Jones.
There's an ego thing for him that he wants to be the guy in charge of the Dallas Cowboys. That matters to him from, like, a...
Forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Forever he wants that. Jerry Jones could not ever relinquish true control to anybody else.
He doesn't want to tell someone else that they'll do it better than him. Like, he doesn't have that in him, that he's just going to be like, no, you can be better at this than I am.
It's why I feel like the Micah Parsons situation is very different. I mean, he straight up said he doesn't want to be there anymore. And he's kind of hinted at that before since Dan Quinn.
And man, he's a friend of Dan Quinn's, you know? So.
And that, well, listen, that's always been the joke, right? That Dan Quinn, they poached a bunch of guys from Dallas's defense last year. Can you poach Micah Parsons in a year? The thing is, though, when you're in, like, the last year of your deal and the risk of getting hurt and the money that you could lose, like, he's better off sitting out. Maybe just sits out. You know what? Here's what we want. Micah Parsons to sit out the entire season. Just get rested up. Do some yoga. Just stay in shape. Fully healthy. Actually, he wouldn't hit free agent because the season wouldn't count. So, actually, that doesn't work.
Yeah, they have that Le'Veon Bell rule now. Yeah.
He's got to do the Trent Williams thing, come back just in time, and then, oh, my hamstring! That's what we want. Micah Parsons hold out, so I think it's like week 6. You want to still vest that. You want to be vested in that season. And then after that, it's, oh, no, I'm hurt. Oh, I can't play anymore. And then Micah Parsons is hurt, fake hurt, the rest of the year. And then in the offseason, he signs in Washington. And then you destroy the Cowboys even more. I would love to see that. I don't think it's realistic, but that's the case. But, yeah, look. Jerry Jones is always... Here's the thing about Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones...
He would never let him go inside the division. I mean, that's the thing. Like, Jerry Jones is not the best GM, but he's not going to let him stay in the division.
That's why it'd never be a trade. It's like, if a team in your division is trading a star player to you, there's something wrong with star player. Ask the Eagles and Donovan McNabb. That's it. That's all you need to see. So
Saquon Barkley, though.
Yeah, but he was a free agent.
Yeah, but
that's what
I mean,
saying. It's different. It's the trade versus free agency. Free agency, it becomes vengeful. Trade, it becomes the team.
They could have kept him. They let him go to Philly.
Yeah, it was stupid.
Yeah, it was stupid.
It was stupid. But like, if you're Saquon, you want to get out too. I mean, Philadelphia is as well run as any organization in the NFL. So that's a much better spot for you to be in. But like, Jerry Jones being in charge of the Cowboys means they're always going to be a circus. They're always going to be having all kinds of distractions. And then when you really look at this, Jerry Jones loves playing games more than winning games. That's really what it's come down to at this point. Like, he loves the attention. He loves the attention dollars, as the junkies always call it. It's true. Like, if you
it's
can,
an ego thing. It's,
yes. Yeah. You can say that you want to win. And, oh, yes, it's all about us winning a Super Bowl. Every year, I'll tell you what, we want to win ourselves a Super Bowl. No, you don't. My Jerry Jones is terrible, and I don't expect it to be good, but that's not the point. When Jerry speaks, it's always premeditated. There's always a reason why he's saying what he's saying. And it's always a negotiation. Listen, the guy is a successful businessman. And he is, in these owner meetings, I haven't been in them, but I know from people that I've talked to, he runs the show.
Well, I mean, the Cowboys are one of the most valuable franchises in the world.
And when have they had any playoff success? They haven't
since the 90s,
decades.
Really.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's my point, because Jerry Jones understands what he's doing, that in the end, you just being talked about makes you a brand in today's world. And it's been that way for a while. He was so far ahead of the curve, long before social media took over all that. He knew. It's all about just being involved in conversation and topics and whatever anybody has to say. As long as the Cowboys are mentioned in there, that's all that matters, which is great because they'll never be an organization that can maximize where they are. Look at the coaching search they had. Brian Schottenheimer? Are we supposed to be scared of Brian Schottenheimer as the head coach of the Cowboys? Guy's been around forever. Hasn't been head coach for a reason. There's a reason why nobody wanted to go. Listen, the Dallas Cowboys, without Jerry Jones in charge, run like a functional organization, are one of the prime coaching spots that any head coach could ask for. The fact that the Cowboys struggled to find
somebody there. You're talking about like your Q rating, yes.
Yes.
But
I mean, look, there's pressure that's there. But what I'm saying is the value of that organization, the resources that you'd have, and on top of that, if Jerry Jones is out of the picture and it's run by like an actual capable GM, like, you know, you're going to get free agents. You're going to get talent. Players are going to want to play there. But every single time another one of these negotiations drags on in Dallas, Dak Prescott twice and CeeDee Lamb, and you go back and, I mean, Emmitt Smith is going way, way back, but he missed the first two games of the regular season. Micah Parsons is now the latest to fall into this whirlwind, this twister, this perfect storm that you get every single time there's contract, star, Jerry Jones. It's a big triangle. That's all that it is. It's a storm and it's a triangle. I don't think this analogy has gone off the rails. But the point is that you get it every single time. And I would love for Micah Parsons to be the guy that digs his heels in and says, you know what? I don't even want to be here anymore anyway. And really, really lives up to what he's saying in terms of, I really do want out versus just a negotiating tactic.
It looks like he may be. The thing that Jerry's done really poorly with, especially, is these stars go ask for a lot of money, and they're elite players, and then he drags his feet on it. Some other guy gets paid a ton, and then he's like, oh, crap, now I got to pay this guy even more than I was going to because the market has now changed, and it's never in your favor. Their prices don't go down over time. You know, it's always somebody signing a new record contract, and I mean, that's what happened with CeeDee Lamb. It's who knows when they're going to sign Mike at this point, but he wants to be paid, I guess they're saying, the highest of any non-quarterback in the league. So,
God, I hope Jarrah's there forever. Oh, Jarrah.
I love him as a GM for the Cowboys.
Forever. I love it.
I love it.
I love it. And the fact that he said so many times that if a GM that he had hired had done the job that he was doing as a general manager, he would have fired him a long time ago. I mean, it is just true Jerry Jones. Well, you know, if it was anybody else, I would have fired him a long time ago, but I'm not going to fire myself. I mean, it's just like, oh, God, I love him. He is the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, I just pray that Jerry Jones, 100 years old, is still in charge of that organization. I just stay around forever. Because the minute that they start becoming truly functional, it's going to make it that much more difficult in a division already that is as polarizing as any division in the NFL. I mean, I just, you know, because at some point the Giants are going to be functional again. I do believe that. And it's going to slowly start. So if you then add the Cowboys in there, the Eagles are going to be around for a while. I hate to say it, but like Philadelphia is going to be around for a long time. They have Howie Roseman is as sharp and as smart and good of his job as any front office personnel person in the NFL. So the Eagles aren't going anywhere. But I think we've got that in Washington with Adam Peters. You may not like the way this negotiation's going, but the reality of it is this is how this stuff is done. And maybe, you know, by week one, we're sitting back, hopefully, and saying, oh, remember the Terry McLaurin contract thing? Nah, it's fine now. It's gone. Nick Cashew on the Fan.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Nick Cashew on the Fan. A friend of mine just texted me. This is what friends are for, Chris. He liked my Jerry Jones impression. So there you go, right? Yeah! I have a challenge for you. Rest of the show, you can't play anything rock, anything metal, anything. You got to completely switch up the genres now. Let's see if you can do it.
Man, I can do it. You know I work for other radio stations around here too, man.
I know you do.
I am a metalhead first, but I am a connoisseur of music across a lot of different genres. So.
Metal one for you. What's two on your depth chart of music genres?
Oh, man. Probably. I mean, if you want to call it classic rock, I think all metalheads are classic rock heads. That's what we kind of start off. You get into Jimi Hendrix and like those kind of things, and then that leads to that. But
that's like a lot more. I feel like that's more mainstream than.
Sure, but like, you know, like Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix are kind of like the first kind of guitar gods most metalheads kind of get into when you're young, and then
they're
it
the
kind of evolves.
So. The
yeah, it is. I mean, they were kind of the first guys to kind of do that in that way, and it goes from there. You know, eventually you get into Black Sabbath, and then that kind of opens the doors to everything. Yeah. So if you don't count classic rock, I'd probably say maybe blues. I like blues a lot. Okay. Yeah, I like jazz too. Like, I don't know, I like a lot of different stuff. So
you know what? I like when someone has a very eclectic mix of music that they like.
Yeah, a lot of times I might not be a huge fan of the genre, but there's like a couple bands in it. Like, I love P-Funk. I'm not a huge funk fan, but I love Parliament. Like, they're awesome. But I don't. So it's just kind of, you know, I wouldn't say I'm some huge fan of funk, but I George Clinton rules.
Yeah. Like, there's you can find one artist or like one or two songs maybe in a genre that you just, you know, you decide to go with.
No, for sure.
Update, the Bruce Allen photo is still staring at me and it has moved again. I just want to let you know. I'm convinced it is moved. Every single time I look at it, the smirk has changed, and it's just Bruce Allen sitting there absolutely staring at me. So, yeah, I want it to go away. I'm going to be honest with you. I really want this thing to go away, and I don't know what to do. I don't want to mess around with all the stuff in here, but I'm realizing more and more. I think I have what would be the right word for this? Some unrecognized trauma from the Bruce Allen era. I think that's what this tells me. That a picture of Bruce Allen staring at me like this, it might be a little too much. But again, like, if you look at from a national, and again, I say like national media, I just did a national show for years, so it's like, you know, most people, when there are stereotypes around an organization, it's hard to just shake them. You can't just get rid of it instantly. It takes time to do that. Now, I think most people are hopefully smart enough to understand that when ownership has changed, the entire organization is going to change, even if it's not instantly. But, you know, you still see a lot of, like, what the hell is this team doing from, you know, certain people, certain former players in the media. I mean, this is what Chris Canty had to say about it when he was on, was it Get Up this morning? I mean, Chris Canty was, you know, all over what the way this organization's handling the Terry McLaurin thing.
It makes no sense to me. This is a guy that, from a culture standpoint, embodies everything you want your program to be about. I don't understand why you don't want to pay this guy. See, sometimes these organizations, these front offices, they can operate in these negotiations with a tad bit of hubris. And it feels like that's what's happening with Adam Peters right now. Sometimes the worst thing that can happen to you in sports and in life is to have success early on because you think you know it all. And you try to hardline every single negotiation. You try to win every deal. Here's the thing that every successful business person knows. You can't win every deal. Every contract negotiation ain't going to be a deal. Sometimes it's just getting the contract signed. And in this instance, that's exactly what needs to happen with Terry McLaurin because he means so much to Jaden Daniels' development. I don't understand why the Washington Commanders are taking this approach with somebody that from a locker room chemistry standpoint, from an on-field production standpoint, brings everything you want to the table. If Adam Peters is willing to do this to Terry McLaurin, then he's willing to do it to anybody in that Commander's locker room. And that might be one of the worst messages you could be sending to the rest of the guys that are involved in your program after having so much success early on.
But is it, though? Is that a bad thing? And the reason I say that is because if you're Adam Peters, you want to show that you're not just going to get walked all over negotiations, but you have to make sure that you walk that fine line, that this becomes a situation where it's a negotiation that doesn't get overly contentious, where Terry McLaurin really truly comes out like Micah Parsons and says, I don't want to be here. See, the trade request from Terry McLaurin was like the, all right, well, why don't you tell him I want to trade, and we'll get to that phase of this whole negotiation. Micah Parsons, it's like, screw you guys, I don't want to be here, I'm putting it on social media. And as we know, if it's not on social media, it hasn't really happened. So now we know he actually really means it. But, like, to sit here and act like, well, Adam Peters and the Commanders had success in year one, so now he's getting cocky. And first off, Adam Peters isn't the first guy to go and negotiate a contract with somebody that's a star player on a team. He also was in a front office that's already gone through this before. And say what we want about a Brandon Ayuk contract and that negotiation and how that went. He tore his ACL. That has nothing to do with any of this, right? Like, anybody could get hurt at any time. It's why players want to maximize all of the money that they can get at any given time. But he was also there with Debo Samuel, and that worked out for the 49ers. So, like, I think we need to pump the brakes on, like, this whole, like, Adam Peters is cocky and sitting here and, oh, well, I had success year one, so now I'm going to treat this star player like crap. Like, that's not what's going on. And just get, like, so much noise here is just kind of, like, clouding people's judgments to the point where, yes, Terry McLaurin means a ton to this organization. Yes, he deserves a new contract. Yes, he deserves to get paid. Yes, he deserves a really good amount of guaranteed money. What that is, you know, he is entering his age 30 season, and that does start to, like, that there is a precedent that has been set to a point with wide receivers, not to the degree we've had with running backs, but, like, that exists. And again, Tyreek Hill is the only wide receiver over 30 making $30 million a year right now. Now, there's going to be other guys jumping into that, and the money keeps going up. And this also goes to, like, the quarterback thing where it's, oh, he's the highest paid quarterback, highest paid player in the NFL. Eli Manning was at one point, and then he's not. Like, who cares? It changes in, like, a year. Dan Orlovsky weighed in on this, too. I really respect what Dan Orlovsky does. I think he's got a great football mind. But, like, he's kind of – it's the same kind of narrative around this team in the front office.
Respectfully, Washington, you were a dumpster fire for years. You were a laughingstock. The only thing good about your organization was that young man. Every year he did it, year after year after year, for like 5 or 6 years with disaster all around you. You were the only reason why anyone spoke somewhat positively about your organization. If you don't have him, you erase everything that you did last year. Everything that you did. And I'm being respectful to Dan Quinn and Adam Peters and what they did last year. You need him. Give me receivers that impact winning. Impact winning as much or if not more than Terry McLaurin. I'll give you like Jamar. I'll give you like Jettis. Justin. Mm-hmm. Amon Ross St. Brown. This guy, he impacts winning. This is a team that had 6 fourth quarter comebacks, was ridiculous on fourth down. What are we doing in Washington? You finally have some good. And you finally have hope for
after
the future.
Year, yes.
And you're trying to take away the one thing in your organization that before Jaden and this group got there was good? It makes no sense.
But like, okay, yes, Terry McLaurin is really important to Washington. Really important to that offense. Really important to the fan base. Really important to everybody. But you don't just give a guy whatever he wants just because he's really important to the organization. Like, there has to be some give and take here so this team has flexibility, because I promise you, they're already thinking about what it's going to cost if Jaden Daniels continues the trajectory that he's on. What do you think that contract's going to look like? I mean, is it going to be a Shohei Ohtani contract, except not stretched out 50 years or whatever the hell it was? Like, that's what we're talking about here. So you have to think years down the road if you're a team. What is Terry going to look like in 3 and 4 years? And what is Jaden Daniels' contract if he continues, hopefully, knock on wood, if he continues to go in the same direction? So it's just so much more than that. This idea that, like, what is this team doing? Oh, they finally got something good. And Terry McLaurin, they were a dumpster fire before. Well, they were a dumpster fire while he was there, and he was a great teammate. And he was a professional, and he got his first big deal, and he deserved it, and he deserves another one. But, like, this idea that you just shouldn't negotiate and just give the guy whatever he wants, it's like, that's not how this works. And yes, is he being used as an example a little bit? Absolutely. Absolutely. And does that suck for him a little bit? Yes. But clearly it's not that bad. He hasn't stayed away from the team. He's still dapping up Josh Harris. And yes, I know it's to make sure that's to make sure that that gets out. You know everybody's going to see it in this whole Terry McLaurin show. It shows that, like, hey, this looks contentious, but it's not as bad as you guys think. That's exactly what that's telling you. Negotiations can get personal because you got to think, right? This is why you have agents to do a lot of these things, because there are conversations of, like, where he ranks. Where is Terry McLaurin? Like, is he better than Justin Jefferson? No. And I love Terry. Again, Team Terry here. But he's not Jamar Chase. He's not Justin Jefferson. You know, you start going on the list and it's like, okay, then where does he rank? But again, it's not about where you rank. The money changes every year. So, like, there's so much in this, but this just... there's so much of this narrative that, like, people think that this team is still going to be, like, falling back into the old traps, or now they've gotten cocky. It's like, there's a middle ground here. And I know we operate in extremes so much in this world today. Look, myself included, I've lost my mind over things before. We all know that. But this is actually a good sign. It's a good sign that this team is going to make smart business decisions. I mean, we saw it was mostly prove it contracts heading into year one, right? I loved that. Now, again, the expectations were, like, what, 6 wins last year? I don't think anybody expected them to win 12 games. But again, that changes the expectations moving forward now, where you look at this team and you say, okay, like, now the expectations are higher, but it's not just about this year. It's not just about this team and having Super Bowl aspirations now. It's setting yourself up so you can be a contender like the Chiefs, like the Patriots in the Tom Brady era. So you can be a contender for years upon years upon years, as opposed to just right now. And they don't have a short-sighted mindset here. They're thinking long-term. And that's the difference from before. You're not giving stars huge contracts because you're ready to put butts in seats. You're doing it because now you want to get guys here that want to win and want to be here long-term, but you're also thinking about post-name player. I mean, there is a post-Terry McLaurin era at some point. Hopefully not for a long time. But the reality of it is that's also where this organization is. You can't just think about now. You can't just think about even 2 years. You got to think 5-6 years down the road to a point. There's only so much you can do. But to a point, you got to be able to think about that too. And that's the difference between now and the past in Washington. Nick Ashew on the Fan.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Yes. You said you'd switch up genres, and you went right in, didn't you? Good job, Chris.
I can do this, man. It's not, I'm not new to radio, man.
Oh, I know you can. I just wanted to see what would happen if I threw that out there. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Metal Chris now giving us some DMX. Woo! Man, DMX, prime DMX, dude.
I like 90s gangster rap a lot, too.
Man. The prime era of hip-hop right there, 90s, 2000s.
I don't care when they're talking about how many cars and girls and money they have. I don't care about that stuff. I like the guys that are like street dudes talking about what it's like to live in L.A. at the 90s. Like that's the stuff I like.
Here, this will make you laugh. So, you know, when you're younger, everybody probably, I mean, maybe now kids today, don't go through this. It was a big deal to get like your first like unedited album of an artist, right? Like, you know, having the parental advisory on, that was a big deal to find your parents let you do it. For me, it definitely was.
Jane's Addiction tape that a friend's older brother had that we got our hands on. We're like, oh, it's got the parental advisory. Yeah.
The first album I got unedited, parental advisory, DMX, Flesh of My Flesh, Blood of My Blood, of all the albums. That album cover, did my parents not see the cover that he's covered in blood? It's a great album, though.
So no, that was the thing that always amazed me about the parental advisory stuff back then, too. Like, I remember I was at, like, a Sam Goody or something getting my dad to buy me. I didn't have my own money yet, you know, as a kid. The Ride the Lightning album from Metallica, which has an electric chair on the cover, you know? And I was like, there's no way he's going to let me buy this. And I remember, like, flipping the tape over the back, and he was, like, looking. And he's like, oh, yeah, whatever, okay, cool. And I was like, all right, not going to say anything, all right.
Like, you know what? You're just going to take whatever. I would wonder. I'd have to. I mean, I think at this point, as somebody that's not a parent, I'm only guessing, but I have friends that are parents. I might have to ask them. I don't think anybody cares about that anymore.
I got two kids. You got to watch out some stuff.
Okay, like, good. Yeah. It's good to know that that's the case. I just feel like now, I mean, you know, I hate that. Like, this is the first point in my life where I've really gotten to where I'm just like, I don't relate with, like, the next generation like I thought. Like, I'm past that point now. Where I just see it and I'm like, oh, there's just stuff. Like, people in their dating in your 20s now is, like, so different than when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, I didn't have apps when I met my girl.
Yeah. So. Yeah, missed out. You could order a date and food on your phone. Missed out on that, you know? But, yeah, it's just like, I don't know. I mean, hopefully that's still the case, but I'm just like, dudes are sending all kinds of pictures and Snapchat and everything else. Still, you know, it's like, come on. It's all different now. Honestly, I'm glad. I'm glad social media was just becoming a thing when I was in high school. Like, whew. You know what? It's probably better that that's the case. But, you know, I know we spend a ton of time on Terry McLaurin, but, like, reality of it is, it's the summer, and this is one of the biggest stories in sports. We had Chris Russell on earlier, and, you know, one of the things that I asked him, besides what's in his bag and how many trinkets he's carrying around with him, you know, it's sort of just like what the Deebo Samuel situation looks like and what they're going to look like in their offense. And I got to be honest with you, like, we have kind of forgotten that there is a chance, and I know Deebo had a down year last year, but listen, San Francisco as a whole, everybody was hurt. It was a mess there. Like, that just, the 49ers last year, they just wiped that seat. Just like, let's get rid of this thing. Like, let's pretend that this never happened. They wiped it clean, and it is what it is. But Deebo Samuel revenge season, I'm all for. I'm all for that this year. And I really do think that there is a possibility, because this is a confident guy. This is a guy that at his peak, one of the most dynamic players in the NFL. Now, do I think that he can be peak Deebo Samuel, like, in his prime? I'm not going to hold him to that standard, but I do think you're going to see some really interesting, unique looks with him as a slot receiver, out of the backfield as a running back, as a wide receiver, whatever the case is. There are a lot of things that you can do. I mean, maybe they're using him they're lining him up as a kick returner and a punt. Like, you can do different things with somebody like that. He's got to be healthy, and he's got to be in shape. And apparently he's both of those right now. Now, you hope that that's going to be the same case during the regular season. Guys, as they get older, it goes two ways. It's one, your body breaks down, you can't do anything about it. Two, it's you get smarter, you know how to take care of your body, you end up prolonging your career. We see both. Hopefully he's the one that does that. Whatever the show was on Netflix, I can't remember because it wasn't Quarterback. It was whatever the show he was in where he was getting all the massages and everything and dealing with the injuries and the shoulder injury. Like, at least he's trying to take care of his body. Massages always help. Always help. Listen, once you hit your 30s, they're talking about Terry McLaurin hitting 30. I'm like, yeah, I remember. Yeah, yeah. Once you hit your 30s, I mean, I'm still in my 30s, but I'm just saying, like, the aches and pains start. Difference is, for, like, normal people, it's not like recovering from Sunday, it's recovering from Saturday night. You know, where you're just like, oh, God, it's not the same. You're just not the same. It's like, yeah, like, you have to think about those types of things. Terry McLaurin adds a certain level of consistency, adds, you know, we know what he brings to the table. But Deebo Samuel is the question mark, because it's what does he look like in this offense and how do they use him? And I really want to see Cliff Kingsbury get creative with him, right? I want to see Cliff Kingsbury in a spot where he says, okay, like, this is a guy that I can use in so many different ways. Because remember last year? And this is when I started getting worried last year, man. Because it was like sitting here and talking about my team on a show that isn't just about Washington sports. And you're like, this is awesome. The whole country cares about my team. This is so much fun. And then all of a sudden the offense is starting to sputter. Then it was the whole Cliff Kingsbury narrative. There is a clip. Yeah. There are clips out there of me losing my mind.
I think it was probably Jaden
that.
Had an injury they weren't really talking about. Yes. But yeah.
Yes. But my point is that if you can now have an extra layer of uniqueness to this offense with somebody like Deebo Samuel, that puts you in a position where you can do new things and where you can add add some new wrinkles to the offense week 10, 11, 12, when there's a lot of already what you've done this year on film? Because it's not just about Jaden Daniels in year two and there being more film and teams studying him and understanding what he's capable of, but it's also the rest of the offense. They've addressed some things on the offensive line. It should be a lot better. The run game's certainly still a question mark right now, although apparently we've got a million preseason heroes on this team, and one of them likes to be called Bill. If you're going to have a running back that's going to be a star and his name's Bill, okay, I'll take that. But, like, I wanted to see more Chris Rodriguez last year, more Jeremy McNichols, and it just felt like they could never really figure out the run game. If you're adding Debo Samuel to the mix, you're going to get somebody else in there that brings something to the table as a pass catcher, as a running back, to the point where you can have some injuries. Look, Brian Robinson Jr., this is a really important year for him because it's all about, like, actually getting another contract. But if he can stay healthy and stay consistent, he doesn't have to run for 1,300 yards. Like, it's probably not going to happen with all the backs that they've got there. But if he can show the level of consistency in the ceiling that we know he is capable of, and you couple that with Austin Ekeler out of the backfield and, you know, Bill,
They beefed up the offensive line, but I think that's going to help the running backs. It's not just for Jaden. Everyone's like, oh, they're doing it for Jaden. Like, well, that is good, but they also want to work on that running game, I think.
100%.
So it's like you're killing two birds with one stone there.
We got worried. We saw Jaden run the ball a lot last year, and the hope was that there wasn't going to be as much. And I feel like they got better and got smarter as the season went on. But you watch that early. And again, we've all got scars. We got scars from RG3 and tearing up his knee in 2012 and all in for week one and how that worked out. So, like, it's there. It exists. But if you can lean less on the legs of Jaden Daniels and more of all of these other backs that they've at least got there in camp right now, and a couple guys are really able to elevate themselves, and this run game is much stronger and more consistent and more dynamic with different varieties that you can throw at defenses, it's going to put them in such a better position from year one to year two. Last year, they overachieved. This year, the expectations much higher. That means teams are coming at you, not like, oh, look at this. It's the cute little Commanders. Now it's, oh, this team went to an NFC championship game and also beat the hell out of the Lions. I mean, let's remember what the Lions were during the regular season and what the Lions were in that playoff game.
Last loss the Eagles had was to the Commanders.
Yeah. So, like, this is a team that grew as the season went on. The question is are they going to be able to continue that trajectory throughout the year? Debo, again, fifth round pick. I had a friend of mine that's a 49ers fan. He texted me when that trade happened, was like, thanks for taking our trash. Not what he sounds like. That's just my impression of him. That's how the text sounded to me when he sent it. It's like, dude, it's a fifth-round pick for Debo Samuel. We're buying low, baby. If it doesn't work out, okay. It's a fifth-round pick. Like, listen, we overvalue draft picks far too much. They're valuable to a point in the NFL, but what I'm going to do is take the guy that has something to prove that still, I think, has something left in the tank in Debo Samuel over a fifth-round pick that may or may not make the practice squad. Okay? Like, I know we love to find the diamonds in the rough, but, like, the reality of it is a fifth-round pick versus Debo Samuel, you can take random guy that I may never see on the field, take that pick, I'll take Debo Samuel. Speaking of that, could have some preseason heroes this game on Friday. Ooh.
But with McLaurin out, too, there's wide open room in the receiver end.
I see what you did there.
And what do you think that could do to his contract? I mean, that's the thing. Like, if the wide receivers come out and they're just dropping dimes and they're throwing like 70-yard touchdown pass to Debo or something, right? It's all yak, right? Like, what could that do to Terry's contract holdout, you know? Like,
the leverage for Terry, my friend. The leverage for Terry. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Ask you on the Fan, just looking at this. So the Cleveland Browns just signed Tyler Huntley, former Pro Bowl quarterback Tyler Huntley, by the way. That is now the sixth quarterback on the Browns roster. Now, I get it. You got some hamstring injuries and guys in camp. It's a camp arm. I get it. But let's just sit here for a minute. All right. Like, I know it's been a lot of Terry. I know it's this. That's what's going on here right now. Right. Like, this is where we are. But at least we're heading into this season, and again, I can be a wee guy because we're talking about it's fan base. I'm part of this. It's good to be back amongst my people again here. Do you remember the time we had six quarterbacks start in one season, including Mark Sanchez? It wasn't that long ago. The Browns have continued on this path, right, where it's just been wandering in a desert, and there's no water, and there's no end in sight, and it's just dunes and sand, and there's nothing. And they're just seeing mirages. Could this quarterback be our guy? Could this quarterback be our guy? Let's just draft another and draft another. You get a quarterback. You get a quarterback. We're drafting all these quarterbacks. And you look around and realize none of them are going to be franchise quarterbacks. None of them. We've been there. We have been there so many times with who's going to be the next guy up. Oh, God. The amount of names that we could go through when it comes to quarterbacks that we thought would be the next guy up, right? Beck and Grossman and Tony Banks was not looked at that. But remember, Tony Banks started some games here. Decent quarterback for the Ravens for a little while. Not in Washington. I mean, again, Donovan McNabb. We traded for Donovan McNabb. A division rival said, here's our franchise quarterback. You don't think something's wrong? Yeah, I'm looking at you, Bruce Allen, who's staring at me right now, his stupid picture in the studio, still. But again, like, it's damn good to be in a much better spot there. It doesn't mean that you want to just wander aimlessly in other situations. You got to be smart. The way you're handling negotiations and the way that you're handling business and thinking long term. Man, I just saw that and was like, Cleveland now has six quarterbacks in camp. Six, Chris. You're laughing, but remember, it wasn't that long ago that we were in wandering that desert and our bare feet, just the sun beating down on us as a fan base wondering, who am I? Who's going to be our quarterback? I mean, it's true.
I wonder if they're like, are they keeping Shadur? Like,
they will, because listen, there's a lot of upside there, and there's certainly a lot of talent there. I just, the fact that he kept dropping, and again, that's been debated endlessly as to why, but the reality of it is the guy's a fifth-round quarterback. If he's on the practice squad this year, you keep him. I mean, that's what you want. Like, you want to be able to develop young quarterbacks and give them an opportunity to grow. The one thing the NFL really lacks is a development. Like, they don't have a minor league. I know the XFL or the UFL, whatever they're calling them now, has their, like, showcase for players.
But
and it's like a college, de facto.
NCAA is closer to the minors.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. But you don't have, like, a development. Like, you don't have a real system like baseball has. I think the NFL would really benefit. This has always been one of those, like, you know, everybody has, like, their, like, random sports take or random life take. To me, the NFL having a true minor league is something they've always lacked and they've always needed. And they don't have it.
And you don't have a way to send someone down and be like, oh, we drafted Johnny Manziel. Maybe he needs another year.
Right.
You know, and, like, they don't have that.
But to get real game experience and not, like, practice squad work.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference. You know, I think... Well, eventually, if the UFL became a true development league, and I know there's a bunch of different things.
They don't have enough teams either.
They don't have enough teams. They don't have. But again, the G League at one point for the NBA didn't either. Teams shared teams. Then eventually everybody had their own affiliates. So the NFL could do something similar. The question is then, like, okay, when do they play? How do they play? Like, it's a more physical sport than basketball or baseball, where, like, you got to also think about player recovery and things like that. You can't sit here and say you care about player safety. And then, you know, so I understand that there's a lot that goes into it. But they could use more. They could really use more that I think that the NFL lacks. But, I mean, that's what Cleveland's trying to do right now. You know? Listen, when you don't have a quarterback, it's endless hell. It's endless hell in the NFL. And, right, there's pros and cons. Because when you have a franchise quarterback, everything feels great. There's this endless level of potential. But you limit yourself as a team, as a sport, as a league, when one position is so important that if you don't have it, you know your ceiling is low. Like, that's the thing. There is such a lack of hope for any fan base when your team does not have a quarterback. It's one position. One position. And if you don't have that figured out, the expectations are always lower.
I mean, it's weird. It's not only just having a quarterback. It's like, it's having an elite quarterback. There are only so many.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like.
Exactly.
I mean, look how much money Jacksonville's paying Trevor Lawrence or whatever. You know, it's like. Is he worth that much? I mean, not really, but there's only so many quarterbacks. Is he elite? Probably not, but he's better than half of them, you know? Like,
that's
going to hold your team back because they have to pay him so much, but then you're still not getting, it's not like they got Patrick Mahomes at the helm, you know? So,
and that's where then the debate comes in about, you know, overpaying for quarterbacks, and it's crept into the wide receiver market now. I mean, we've seen it it really started with, like,
I wonder if they're going to start capping quarterbacks at some point. Like, they're going to have a separate cap for quarterbacks because they're taking such a percentage of the overall cap. The other players at some point are going to be like, wait, we're all getting paid less because one dude is getting paid so much on the team.
there was a point where, you know, number one overall picks were normally quarterbacks, obviously, in the NFL before they had rookie scale contracts. And it became, look at all these contracts you're giving out to players that have not played a single down in the NFL. And there's so much riding on their success so early. So they you know, the CBA, they gave them a, you know, rookie scale contract like the NBA has. I would not be surprised
but
if
now,
it's at least
now
pushed,
people take
though,
advantage the,
max
of it.
Contracts. Max contracts in the NFL would have to be based more on position versus the NBA. Just, you know, they've got their whole, you know, we know how it is, 10 years of service and you're equal to the max can be 35% of the salary, whatever it is. Again, every league has their own CBA. Everything's different. It's insanely complicated and nobody cares. But like, if you're looking at where you are right now in the quarterback market and where the wide receiver market's starting to go and you go down the list, you got a lot of teams putting a lot of money to a few positions. And they're important positions. But it's a few positions. Here's the thing, though. You're not going to see players arguing for any sort of max contracts, but you're going to see owners arguing for it. So do you compromise?
You might see non-quarterbacks asking for a quarterback cap. That, like, you could see something like that.
You could. But do you see? Is there maybe a compromise somewhere in these negotiations where players and the Players Association says, okay, you can have max contract based on positions, and they figure out the formula for how that works or whatever it is, but we want the ability to have fully guaranteed contracts. Is that the trade-off that gets more fully guaranteed? Because I know we have had them a couple of times down in the NFL. Deshaun Watson was not a good example. So, no. Like, you're not helping the case with that at all, and owners were pissed off about that deal. So, do you see some level of compromise? And I think that's where we go next. It's like, okay, what does that next CBA look like? Because quarterback deals are getting absolutely out of control. Absolutely out of control. But at least you're not the Cleveland Browns, who have six quarterbacks out there, and none of them are franchise quarterbacks. Joe Flacco is the one that should be starting for them anyway, week one.
He was a franchise quarterback.
He was back,
you know,
in the day. Ravens fans are, you know, may disagree with you on that, but I can tell you right now.
He won a Super Bowl for him.
Thank you. Thank you. Spoiled Ravens fans. I tell them that all the time.
Wait, wasn't Trent Dilfer?
Yeah. Well, he won a Super Bowl, too. He just won that was a franchise defense. That was a Ray Lewis defense is what it was. Nick Ashew on the Fan.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.